Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and this satsang, this radio program, as we call it, is for Sunday, January 8th, 2017, and we are most grateful to be with you. We really are. I want to thank my sponsors for making this possible. If it weren't for them, these radio programs, these satsangs would not be here for you. And I want to remind you that it is only their kindness that makes all of this happen. It really is. And I hope that if you're finding these satsangs to be helpful to you, that you will join them and become a sponsor, or at least make a donation to help keep us on the air. And you can do that by going to the website at aspire.org. That's A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. Go there and you will see support. And you can make a donation right there or become a sponsor. And there's a lot of lovely gifts that come to you each and every month for being a sponsor. And I hope that you will participate and help us sustain our program. It's very, very important. Let's talk about the heart. In all of my work, in my discourses, my journal, my commentaries, and almost everything I do, I talk a little bit about the heart and that there are two hearts, the human genetic DNA heart, and then the heart, the real one, the spiritual heart. So I'm going to kind of talk a little bit today about that, addressing the issue of that, because I get lots of emails on this, and I mean a lot of them, and it's mostly from women who want to know what the difference is basically between their emotions and what it's really all about, what their DNA is doing to them. So anyway, here we go. This is it. Maybe this will be of service and help to you. First question comes from Jay. And Jay says to me, are not my emotions from my heart? Are they not my feelings? I don't understand what you're talking about. Jay, it is a very difficult thing to understand, and yet a simple thing to become aware of. I have a genetic heart that was passed down to me from my mother, my father, all the way down to me here in this lifetime right now. And I have a DNA. This DNA is basically a fear. I have a great deal of fear about my survival, fear of maybe death, fear of pain, fear of discomfort. There's these animalistic tendencies that all of us have inside of us that move us emotionally to act and react, fight or flight. And it's in our DNA. It is our ability and our willingness to survive. And if we're in that survival modality, and that's the only thing we have going for us, So that's the way we live. And then I have my genetics. My genetics are how my forefathers interpreted my DNA. And they took my DNA and they looked at it and they saw, well, this is a there's a faster way to skin a cat here and do a this there. And before you know it, pride and vanity build up. And all of these things build in my emotionality, in my body. My body calls to me to incarnate it when I'm in that, what shall we say, in-between world, between lives. So my mother and father get together, because of predestination with them and karma I have with them. They make a body. It's perfect for me. Which came first, the predestination or Ed and Jean coming together and making a baby? You decide. Personally, it's in my viewpoint, from my perspective, my direct perspective, it's all in harmony with the kind of lifetime I had behind me, the kind I left behind me. So all of this is going on, and my karma is building and building and building and building. And Ed and Jean appear. They offer me the body that is absolutely perfect for me, for a Gregory to enter into. And here I go. I slip right into that little puppy, and I'm gone. I'm in it. And I'm swimming in both their genetics and their emotionality and how they determined what was right and wrong and good and bad and up and down. And I got my own DNA too, which is saying, Greg, you got to survive. You got to do this to survive. You got to do that. If you've ever been in any kind of dangerous situation where the adrenaline kicks in, you know what your DNA is capable of and how powerful it can be. So you've got these two things going on all the time. All the time. And they translate into emotionality. In this emotionality, I make decisions about what the rest of my life is going to look like. I make literal decisions. I'm going to be emotional about this. I'm not going to be that emotional about that. I parson out my emotions. And they determine exactly how I'm going to think, how I'm going to act, and where I'm going to act from. That's it. My whole life is determined by the kind of emotions that run through my body, that run through my core of my veins, making me anxious or fearful or mean or angry. That's how it works. And I do this over and over and over again. So there you are. That's how that came into being. So you say, are not my emotions from my heart? I have a genetic heart. You have a genetic heart. My genetic heart belongs to Ed and Jean and their grandparents and their grandparents and their parents and da-da-da-da-da down the line. It's where pride and vanity and fear came in. And you can live your whole life off this if you want. Most people do. They live their entire life off of the whole idea of the genetic heart, which is telling them constantly what to feel, how to feel it. And it's actually interpreting the defense mechanisms of my genetics and telling me how to survive. And it sets into motion fear. Now, you don't ask the question in your little email to me about where did fear come from. But that's where fear came from. It came from the interpretation I have of my own survival, how I will survive, the way I will survive. How will I do this? And this goes on and on and on within me. It doesn't change. It doesn't evaporate. It just gets more and more. So as I get comfortable with my life and I think that maybe I've got it made, I don't have to worry about being eaten up by, you know, tigers and lions and things like that and bears. I start to, ease up on it. But the DNA doesn't ease up and the genetics don't ease up. They just keep going and going and going and going. And they want more. It creates greed in me and insecurity in me. And before I know it, I'm nothing but greed and insecurity. And those things are dear to my human heart. And before I know it, that's the sum and substance of my life. And I cover it up very cleverly with personality, with ego, with hubris. I cover it up with moderately kind actions and things like that, but I never really overcome it. I never overcome anything in my life, not ever. So there you are. That's the human heart. And the human heart, the emotionality of it, is the feelings you have all the time of running away from things you're afraid of, things that are unpleasant, trying to avoid what is unpleasant, and trying to live your life according to the manner of, what shall we say, the things that make you feel like you've avoided some danger or something unpleasant, and that's as far as our life goes. If you look at it, the saddest part of our life is that we are trying to avoid, just trying to avoid. We use religion and philosophy and politics to try to avoid the inevitable, which is that there is danger everywhere and that we are going to die and that there is illness and sickness, no matter what anybody tells you. And there is all sorts of hazards in this world, but we try to cover them up with entertainment. We try to cover them up with money and pride and vanity. And before you know it, no one can escape it. You know, those beautiful models of the 60s and 70s and 80s and even the 90s, look at them. They're not so beautiful anymore. Age takes over. Emotions take over. The whole cycle of living in this world takes over. And before you know it, that's what we are. We become those things. And you have to look at it and go, what was my life all about? Life is based on impermanence. Always remember that. It's about a certain form of impermanence. And if you understand impermanence, you understand the nature of living in this world as a human being. And the whole effort of any kind of spiritual practice is to transcend that. That's very important, to transcend it. Jay, you only have one real feeling, and that is from your authentic heart. But that's another story. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as I get down into the other questions. But your question was fabulous, and I want to thank you. Thank you for being honest, and please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from May. She does not tell me where she lives. My heart, Greg, pours out emotions and passions day after day. This is how it is. This is how I do my work, with passion. Are you telling me that there is something else, that I'm doing something wrong? May. Your passion will eat you up. Passion is an interesting word. When does passion turn to obsession? That's the question you have to ask yourself. When are the things that I'm most passionate about turning into the obsessions I'm most clinging to in my life? If you begin to see it and look at it, you will see that passion and emotion have a lot to do with each other. And that when I become passionate, I become obsessed. And when I'm obsessed, I'm not in my spiritual heart. I'm not in the authentic heart that connects me to the universe. I'm in my Gregory heart, my Gregory genetic heart. And it's pouring out. It wants this, that, and the other. I don't know what, you know, I could tell you things about my genetic heart. It wants peace on earth. It wants everybody to be happy. It wants there to be no misunderstandings. It wants there to be no one with hard feelings or terrible emotions. It wants everybody fed and everybody clothed and everybody safe and animals safe and we don't have to eat them and da 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 da. All that stuff. He has a fairyland in his mind, and that's his emotionality. And his emotions really can get into that and get all passionate, but it's not reality. It's not the real aspect of life. Now, I can resent that, or there's all sorts of things I can do with that. But if I want to resent it and I want to hate it and I want to whatever it, I can do that. But what good is that going to do me or anyone else or you? What good is that going to do any of us? None. And that's why it's important to understand that passion eats you up. Passion makes me ludicrous. I start thinking in terms of crazy mind. It makes my mind flip and do, well, we could do this. And most people get very passionate about what they hate. And that's the bad part. they get passionate about who they're opposing. And this is why politics are so popular. Because in politics, you can become passionate, self-righteous about what you hate. And it makes you believe that you are clever and smart and better than. So this can go on and on and on in your life and make you feel as though you have climbed every mountain and that you are special above all other people because you know what's right. It is in passion that we believe there is a right and there is a wrong. It is in passion that we miss our entire life and lifetime in this world because we are so busy being self-righteous. No one wants to see this. No one. It's very, very few people on earth that look at it and go, this is not something that is good for humankind. It's not something that's good for myself. I have to see the bigger picture. People don't want to see the bigger picture. They don't believe in the bigger picture. They don't think the bigger picture exists even, but it does. And that's why it is so important for all of us to start to awaken, spiritually speaking. If I don't awaken, if I don't move beyond the idea of right and wrong, good and bad, if I don't move beyond those emotions that are stirring, powered by DNA and the fear of my own death or fear of pain, then what do I do but create more karma? Everything I hate as a Gregory is something I have to deal with in my life. Those people that I hate because they didn't do what I wanted them to do have now become my karma if I'm not careful. Hating other people. With this, your love and your hate become a weapon against yourself. So when you ask me about my heart pours out emotions and passions, and this is how it is, are you telling me there's something else? Are you telling me this is wrong? I'm telling you there is something else. I'm telling you that your passions will eat your house up. I'm telling you that you are obsessed and compulsed. I am telling you that this is a disorder. It is not healthy, and it will not help you. You have to begin to see a bigger picture in this life. You have to begin to see something other than what you believe in and what you want. You have to be able, if you're going to awaken, you're going to have to awaken to the spiritual heart. I can't make you do this. These aren't my rules. This is just what I've found. This is what I've come across in my own work, in my own life. I am not trying to hammer down a philosophy for you. You'll have to learn your own way. And what that means typically is all sorts of crap and corruption have to happen to us. We have to fall into all sorts of mischief and basic highs and lows before we ever learn, hey, this isn't working. This isn't what my life is all about. There's nothing I can do about it. I love my students. I love them with all my heart. I do. But I watch them put themselves through useless pain and suffering. And you can't talk them out of it. There is no way to talk them down. They're going to do what they're going to do what they're going to do. And there's nothing I can say to change it. They'll do it. And they'll do it in the hidden resources of their emotionality and their mind, thinking that no one is going to know how they feel or what their mischief is all about. But it eventually surfaces and it comes to bear. And there you are. And there's nothing I can do. I can sit down and talk to them about it, but a lot of it is hidden in their unconscious mind, so they don't even know it's there. This is why the power of meditation is so deeply important, because it is in meditation that you can move to a different energy, have a different substance in you than the one you and I currently live with that is all about how we survive through hate and passion and fear. May, you need to work on yourself. You need to question your passions, your emotions. Just question them. Watch them. Where are they coming from? What are they doing? What is your motivation with them? And what do you do with any part of anything that is opposing your emotionality? What are we talking about here? It's very important. I hope that helps you. I fear it doesn't, but I hope it does. Please forgive me. Namaste. Very few people can hear this. It's just very hard for people to distrust their emotionality, especially when it gives them such drama. The last question comes from Linda in San Diego. If I can't trust my feelings, Greg, what can I trust? You say the human heart is untrustworthy. What do I trust, Linda? Don't trust your feelings. Trust your feel. It's really simple to determine the difference between emotionality and the feel of your authentic heart. It's real simple. Emotionality is about many things, many emotions, all sorts of emotions. Love, hate, right, wrong, good, bad. All sorts of emotionality. But the feel is about one thing. You'll know you're in your authentic heart when you feel only one thing. That one thing is love itself. But this love is not emotional. It is intelligence. It is profound intelligence. It opens up so many worlds within this lifetime. You are able to peer into the whole universe through the heart. You can feel it throb, but more importantly, it is an intelligence that exceeds my mental and emotional abilities in this body. It's transcendental, and it's transcending. And it's only about one thing. It is about the origins of the universe, which is love. Only love. It is achieved through meditation and personal diligence. And when you are diligent and when you are kind, when you are persevering beyond your beliefs, your analytical thoughts, your analog thinking, when you are done with your thoughts of right and wrong, the pettiness of thoughts themselves coming out of emotionality, when you are absolutely done with that, that is when the authentic heart will start to emerge. And you will feel it meditatively. You will fall into it meditatively. It will give you information and insights that you never had before that are absolutely pertinent to you living a life that is conscious. So when we're talking about living consciously, you understand exactly what we're talking about. Conscious living is living in and of the authentic spiritual heart. And there are no words for it. If you've ever been around someone who is enlightened, they have no words. They need no words. It is just this great beauty pouring through them. In fact, there is no person even there. It's just this great beauty. And that's what you are. You are just a great beauty. And you have simply forgotten it. And when you choose to remember how beautiful this love and this feel is, you will. And it will change everything about how you live. Please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, or something I might be able to be of service to you, please know you can come to the website at aspire.org. That's aspire.org, and there you will see at the top of the page, Media. And if you click on Media, you will see Satsang with Saraj, that be me, and all you have to do is click on that. You can listen to radio programs from years past and all that stuff, in the future even, and you can also write me a question, and I'd love to hear from you, I really would. Have a beautiful day. Thank you for listening. And once again, always again, please forgive me. Namaste.